Well, since we couldn't have a lecture last time, I have a choice. I could have skipped ahead and just had you listen to the archived version of what I would have said last time. But I think it's better to actually give you this lecture live, even if it means I run out of time, because the stuff at the very end, that last lecture, if I don't quite get all through that, that's not as much of a problem just having you listen to the archives. This, though, can be confusing, so I'm going to do it this way. We are in a chapter called Meiosis and Sexual Life Cycles, and we'll get to meiosis in a bit, but in this opening slide, we're seeing examples of organisms, and the two examples represent the dichotomy with respect to reproductive modes that organisms can use. And that dichotomy is that there is asexual reproduction and there is sexual reproduction. And there's even some organisms that are capable of both, but most organisms are either asexual or sexual. The hydra here is an example of an asexual reproducer. The redwoods are sexual. There is no... It's not correct to say that one mode of reproduction is better than the other. Both of them have advantages and disadvantages, but they're fundamentally different, which is why it's a dichotomy. And really, the difference, when you get down to it, has to do with DNA, how DNA is treated in the process. Because remember, in reproduction, it's DNA that gets passed on from one generation to the next, as we've talked about. Well, in asexual reproduction, there is a single parent, and when that parent reproduces, it creates some number of offspring that are genetically identical to each other, and they're genetically identical to the parent. So asexual reproduction makes exact copies, genetically speaking, as offspring. On the other hand, sexual reproduction requires two parents. Now, those parents don't have to encounter each other. It depends on the species. For instance, the redwoods here, they don't get up and walk and find a redwood mate. But their gametes, which I'll talk more about, have to come into contact, even though the entire organisms don't. Anyway, in sexual reproduction, two parents are involved, each of which supplies a gamete. And gamete is a unisex term for sex cell. So there are two versions of gametes for a species. And it's not always, the names aren't always these two, but often it's sperm and egg. Sperm is a male gamete, egg is a female gamete. But in any sexual species, there is a male version of a gamete and a female version. That's what gametes are. And so, each of these parents supplies some DNA from itself to the offspring, and some number of offspring are produced, just like in asexual reproduction. But unlike asexual reproduction, the offspring that are produced by sexual reproduction are all genetically distinct from each other, and they're all genetically distinct from both parents. So, genetically speaking, sexual reproduction produces offspring that have never existed genetically before. It mixes things up genetically, in other words, sex does. Now, I said that there's advantages and disadvantages. Why would it be advantageous, or under what situations would it be advantageous to reproduce asexually?
If you have just one individual?
Yeah, for one thing, it's simpler, exactly. You don't have to involve another individual.
I used to have just one bladder snail in my aquarium. I have like 200.
Yes, it is easier. That is an advantage in itself. But based on what I told you is about the offspring, genetically they are identical to each other, and they're all identical to the parent.
So they're like diseases.
What situation would that be advantageous in?
Like if one parent resists the disease, then you know all the offspring are going to resist it. But if
that's right.
Parent doesn't, then that's like a crapshoot of who's going to resist and who's not.
And more generally, that's the right answer, but more generally speaking, if that individual is well adapted, meaning has a high fitness, as we call it, high fitness means that that particular genetic combination, whatever the genes that individual have, those happen to give that individual just the right traits to live well in the situation it lives in. And therefore, if that's true, if an individual already has high fitness, why would you want to mix things up? It would be advantageous to make exact copies of that individual again, right? Because they will have the same high fitness. Except for what, though? What is the problem with that? The fitness is defined as your genes work for you under this situation. If the situation changes, exactly. Real environments do change over time. So if you just keep making exact copies, eventually that version of the genes might not be the right fit for the now different environment. And so that's the big advantage of sex. You have no idea what you're going to get. It's a crapshoot. Because it's some combination of each of the parents' genes that the offspring will get. And that means some of them, by chance, won't be as fit as either parent. But it also means that, by chance, some might be even better fit, especially to an environment that's changing than either parent was. So that's the big advantage of sex. But that's the fundamental difference between the two. And for, effectively, the rest of the chapter, we'll be focusing on sexual reproduction, which involves meiosis. But before we get to the particulars of that, let's look at this picture in slide 2. And the picture within the slide, the black background picture, is a photograph that's an example of what we call a karyotype, which, notice, has the same root as the words eukaryotic and prokaryotic. That karyo root means kernel. It refers to the kernel or core of the cell, which, if it has one, is the nucleus, right? So a karyotype gets its name because it's a picture of what's in the nucleus of a eukaryotic cell. And this is a real photograph. It's been colorized, of course, but it's a real photograph. But it is not, it's really a composite photograph. What I mean by that is that a cell does not pose like this with its chromosomes neatly arranged by order of size and paired up like this. So this has to be a cut and paste job. Now that the original cut and paste was actually cutting with scissors and pasting with glue. You would take a picture, you would photograph a cell through a microscope during metaphase. And the reason that you would want to get a cell in metaphase is because, remember that metaphase is the time in the cell cycle when the degree of condensing of the chromatin is maximized. In other words, the chromosomes are going to be as small as possible and therefore as easy as possible to tell apart from other chromosomes in there. So you take a picture of that cell, and the chromosomes are wherever they happen to be. And then you cut them out, and you print the picture. This is how it was originally done. Print the photographic image, and then use scissors and cut out each individual chromosome and arrange them by size, and you pair them up. The two biggest ones, that's pair number one. The two next to biggest, two number twos, and so on. And then you paste those on another piece of paper, and you take a photograph of that. Well, now the cutting and pasting is electronic, but the process is exactly the same. All right, that's a karyotype. And this happens to be a human karyotype. And I can tell that by how many chromosomes there are here, how many types of chromosomes there are, which is 23. There's 23 different types of chromosomes for a human. And that number just depends on the species. Some species have more chromosomes than we do. Some have fewer. For humans, it's 23 different kinds. But notice that there's also two of each kind. There's two number ones, two number twos, and so on. And number one is what we're looking at in cartoon form and close up on the left. Now, what looks like in the photograph, in one X-shaped thing, is really two X-shaped things when you get down to it. One half of this cartoon is one replicated chromosome made up of two sister chromatids. When I introduced the word chromatids before, we saw just one replicated chromosome that itself is kind of like an X because it's connected. The chromatids are connected at the centromere, right? Well, there are two of those here, not just one. This is two overall chromosomes, two replicated chromosomes. And it's actually enough information, enough genetic information for four cells, as we'll see. But the reason that they are the same kind of chromosome is not only that they're the same size, but the genes that they contain, remember each chromosome is one long DNA, but within that one long stretch of nucleotides are genes. The genes that are contained in this number one chromosome are the same for these two versions of number one. They're not identical genetically, but what I mean by the same kind of genes is that they are codes for making the same kinds of proteins to do the same kinds of jobs. And they therefore correspond to the same set of traits. But the genes on number two are totally different genes, and so on. All right? So it's called number one because those are the biggest, and that's part of the ordering up here. You go down in size. The 23rd pair doesn't have a 23 on it, but it's the 23rd pair. And that's a special pair compared to the rest, the ones that are 1 through 22. The one here, it's an X and a Y. There's two versions of sex chromosomes in humans and some other animals, as we'll talk about later. But that's one kind of chromosome, a sex chromosome, so named because they are involved in determining the sex of offspring. All the other ones, in other words, however many chromosomes there are that are not sex chromosomes for that species, are called autosomes. Okay, so humans have 22 autosomes and a pair of sex chromosomes. 11 pairs of autosomes. 22 pairs of autosomes, I should say, and also one pair of sex chromosomes. All right, now, this brings up some important definitions that I'll use slide 3 to explain, hopefully. These are confusing definitions when you first learn them, I find. About half of the people struggle with this. Both of these words that I'm about to define have to do with numbers of chromosomes, but in entirely different ways. The first one is symbolized simply as N. What N means is, regardless of species, N always means how many types of chromosomes that species has. All right, so for humans, N, which is a variable, of course, for humans or for any other given species, it's not a variable. It's only a variable between species. But for humans, N equals 23. For corn, N equals 40, and so on. Different number for each species. Now, it's called also the haploid number. All right. And N, which